And welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Tuesday, April 4th, 2023. South Sudan's Ministry of Finance rolls out a new portal for financial transparency.
A credible website whereby we can share information. And share information here in particular. It's not just only just simple information. It is the information about the reforms that we are undertaking in the Ministry of Finance.
And South Sudan's Vice President for Service Cluster says the country needs qualified teachers.
General screening of teachers, both primary and secondary school teachers countrywide, to be recruitment of qualified teachers, both primary and secondary school, all over the country.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's Ministry of Finance and Economic Planning has launched Aid Management Information System to help the ministry achieve its goal of financial transparency in the country. The Minister of Finance and Economic Planning, Der Tong Moore, says the new system will address gaps in the ministry. For VOA News, Juliana Shapai has more from Juba.
Addressing participants at the launch of the Aid Information Management Systems, AIMS, Minister Ngor thanked the United Nations Development Programme and the other development partners for supporting the AIMS portal. He says the new portal will help the government implement some key components of the 2018 peace agreement, adding that the South Sudan's development partners will now be able to follow financial reforms within the ministry.
A credible website whereby we can share information. And share information here in particular is not just only just a simple information. It is the information about the reforms that we are undertaking in the Ministry of Finance and in the economic sector in general. As you all know, part of the peace agreement that was signed in 2018, particularly chapter 4, is mainly about economic reforms. And we have started, since 2020, we have started this process. A structure was put in place. We have the oversight committee that is co-chaired by myself and members of the development partners. And that committee has been working all this time. And a lot of work has been done. We have agreed 11 priority areas of reforms that we are making progress on. This website will give us that chance really for us to share all what we are doing with you and with all our development partners.
World Bank Country Manager for South Sudan, Firas Rad, praised the Ministry of Finance and Planning for creating a system for managing aid funds.
We commend this initiative because it is fully in line with the goals of financial transparency to make sure that what the government is spending and what donors are spending on South Sudan are fully announced, available for people to access. And I think the website itself and AIMS as an information system will facilitate the achievement of that goal.
South Sudan Director General of National Communication Authority says he is delighted to see government institutions are going digital. Napoleon Adok says government institutions will be provided with .ssd domain for email accounts.
We are happy to see that many government institutions are embracing now domain, and I'm hoping that the Minister of Finance will be able to update their business card and get rid of Gmail and start having the email address of the Minister of Finance. So that when they write to the World Bank and IMF, your email will not be sent into junk mail. It will now come official from a country. And that's why some of our officials, they write email to their counterpart. The first place to go is junk mail, because those countries don't use free email.
Adok also says the Ministry of Finance and Planning should put measures in place to protect the new website from cybercrime.
The second thing is being online is to be able to protect yourself online. the cybersecurity. There has to be a mitigation mechanism that is put in place to make sure that this website, the content on it, remain with integrity, remain what it is and what it is expected.
Minister Ngor says his office had created other websites before, but none of them were using the South Sudan's domain. He says he hopes the new team will make a difference. For VOA News, I am Juliana Sherpai in Juba.
Still in Juba, traders say the weekly protest in neighboring Kenya could affect the country's economy. Ayei, chairperson of the South Sudan business community in Juba, says the country and other East African member states are worried that goods coming into South Sudan from Kenya may delay and market prices could shoot up in South Sudan. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
South Sudan chairperson of the business community in Juba, Ayi Duang Ayi, says the side effects of the just-concluded protest in neighboring Kenya could have negative impact on South Sudan's crippling economy. He says truck transporting goods into South Sudan may delay along the road, adding that some of the trucks could take advantage of the insecurity along the Mombasa-Nairobi road to attack truck drivers.
It has a greater impact because our goods, which are supposed to come into South Sudan through Mombasa, and with the protest in Kenya, it is possible the goods coming into South Sudan may get looted along the way.
Ayi says some business leaders in Juba recently met officials from South Sudan Ministry of Foreign Affairs and discussed alternative routes for importing goods into the country.
We have discussed and will meet the Minister of Foreign Affairs so that we can transport our goods through Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, because we are afraid of possible damages along the Mombasa-Kenya routes to South Sudan. That is to avoid the delay of the goods reaching into the country and people would not benefit from it.
The chairperson of the Central Equatorial State Chamber of Commerce, Robert Pitia Francis, says the government is aware of the challenges facing traders who depend on imports from Kenya and Uganda. Francis says the protests in Kenya and other several factors are responsible for the skyrocketing prices of goods in the markets across South Sudan.
We know we have external factors and internal factors. External factors is one of the issues of the price of goods are already gone up. You come to add on this, the taxes and this, some of the issues that are facing also the transportation costs of the goods, and it also adding up on these goods. And automatically, who is going to pay the price are the citizens.
Sadiq Jamal Musa is the chairperson of the Somalia business community in Juba. Musa says the cost of transporting goods from Kenya into South Sudan increased last month due to changes in Kenya.
The problem is now all the transportation bureaus also they are complaining because they're using the train is bringing all the material to Tripod in Nairobi. After that, the transportation charge also going high.
According to UN Food and Agriculture Organization, up to 95% of South Sudanese rely on farming, herding, or fishing. Markets in major towns in South Sudan depend on goods from Kenya, Uganda, and Sudan. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Still in Juba, South Sudan government says unqualified teachers are working in some schools across the country. The country's Vice President for Service Cluster, Hussein Abdulbagi Akol, says the government will embark on screening teachers across the nation to remove unqualified personnel from schools. For VOA News, Rose KG Benjamin reports from Juba.
The Vice President for Service Cluster, Hussein Abdulbagi Akol, who addressed reporters on Monday at the Ministry of General Education and Instruction in Juba, says the government will screen teachers across the country to improve the poor quality of education in South Sudan.
There are also ghost teachers in the payroll of the school, restructuring an amalgamation of a scattered school countrywide in accordance with the prevailing government standard. General screening of teachers, both primary and secondary school teachers countrywide, to be recruitment of qualified teachers, both primary and secondary school, all over the country.
Georgie Kenyi is the director of Juba Day Secondary School in Juba. Kenyi says scarcity of qualified teachers has forced his school to depend on volunteers who, he says, are teaching various subjects in his school.
We don't recruit teachers in the school. We are a government school. They get recruited by the Ministry of Public Service through they apply to the Ministry of Education. Then we recruit volunteers who are already practicing teachers. Don't come just from the street. If I have, for example, I don't have a teacher of English in my school, then I will look for a teacher of English who is teaching already in another school and negotiate with him, and that person will come and in my part here, he will be a volunteer, or we call him part-time teacher, accounting. Accounting is only got in the School of Management or in the Faculty of Accounting. This is the person who is being called unqualified but can be retrained to now deliver subjects effectively.
Peter Nyarsuk works as project officer at Windle Trust in South Sudan, a UK-based charity helping community affected by conflict to access good quality education. He says the country has some unqualified teachers working at several schools across the country. Nyarsuk says Windle Trust is working to address the problem in South Sudan.
There are several areas. We provide them with the materials. Teacher's kit will help them deliver their lessons. Number two, we train them on the methodology, teaching method, because most of them, the teachers who are in the field, they are not trained teachers, like teachers who are not professionally trained. But most of them are volunteers and have not gone through teacher training. So we give them, because they are the ones who are making the schools run, so we try to help them as they are also helping the schools. So we train them how to teach. We give them literacy and numeracy training so that it will help them teach lower classes from P1 to P4, because these are the most important foundation for the learners. We work with the National Minister of Education. Training of teachers is one of it.
Vice President Akol says schools should recruit professional teachers to improve the quality education in South Sudan. He says the government will recruit qualified teachers once the screening of schools is completed this year. According to UNESCO, South Sudan has an adult literacy rate of 34.52%. For VOA News, I am Roskeji Benjamin in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, teachers offering voluntary services at a government school say enough is enough. Find out why after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Some teachers have abandoned government schools in Torit following a decision by South Sudan government to offer free education across the country. Most volunteer teachers at a school in Torit boycotted classes last week, saying they cannot teach in government schools since parents are not paying fees that are used for paying monthly incentives to volunteers. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio is in Torit and has this story.
Most teachers who are volunteers walked out of schools last week following a decision by the National Ministry of Education to introduce free education across the country. Gemma Moses is a teacher at Torit One, government-owned primary school in Eastern Equatoria State, capital Torit. He says he decided to stop teaching so that he feed his family.
For 3 years, I've been volunteering in school, one of the government school, Torit One Primary School, in Eastern Equatoria here. So during that time, actually, we have been motivating good, and that time, also, the contribution that the parents are giving those are the things that those are the money that is helping us volunteers, and at the same time also helping the government teachers for them to get something also small to help them at least run for the activities or to help also their parents or their children at home.
Juma says he used to get 15,000 South Sudanese pounds as his incentive before the government abolished school fees. He says he now operates motorbike taxi, locally known as Boda Boda, to earn a living.
Like for the government teachers in our school, there are only 8 government teachers, and we are 16 volunteers. So since we woke up, since we woke out, the issue of now, I say now, also the school is going to have problem in teaching. Also, they will have problems because also the learners will lack teachers to teach them. Like, for example, especially the candidate. The candidate, will affect them so much.
Some students at Torit One Primary School say since volunteer teachers walked away, they have been waiting for days without teachers in classrooms. 14-year-old William Peter is a primary 8 learner. He says students in his school are missing a lot.
We don't have teachers. All the volunteer teachers have go. And the teachers that is in our class is one teacher, only for mathematics. And this thing, it can make children to drop out from a school, which is not good.
Lagwe Charity is a head teacher at Torit One Primary School. She says high school has no option but to implement the government's decision.
The teachers were sent away because we were managing teachers through the payment of school development fund, which was the parents' contribution. After the announcement, because we are told not to take any coin from the learners, so because the school cannot manage, and at this time, the money which was promised by the government is not currently available. So at the end of the day, we thought this teacher may ask for something little to be paid to them. But because we don't have this money at hand, we told them to leave at least teaching for a while, not until when this money is availed. So we send them home. Currently, the government teachers are the one working.
Charity says the decision to introduce free education has interrupted learning at Torit One Primary School.
Of course, the number are many. The interruption in the learning has made a very big difficult challenge at current. One is the teachers are having like 4 subjects in the class, which is making the school not run well. You may find a teacher who cannot go up to the upper class. So because of this challenge, most of the teachers are overcrowded with the lesson. You may find one teacher taking 5 subjects, which is not needed. And the crowding of the learners itself, because a teacher ratio to the learner is supposed to be 50 per teacher. Now, because of the free education, the classes are overcrowded. At the end of the day, you may find this teacher is tired. So this is the challenge that we are facing on ground currently.
Some parents in Torit say the government should recruit more teachers and pay them on time. A parent who only identified herself as Nancy for fear of government reprisals says the government should pay teachers in government schools.
Getting money is hard. You are the one, as a parent, you are the one paying the teachers, and yet it is supposed to be the government doing that, not with the parents, because our work is to provide the needful for them to see that they're in school, things like exercise books, pens, these scholastic materials to send them to school. But via paying of the teachers, I feel as a parent that is the government's job.
2 weeks ago, the South Sudan government introduced free primary and secondary education across the country. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva. Aurelio in Torit.
From Torit, we move to Khartoum, where more than 10 years after South Sudan split from Sudan, as many as 1.2 million South Sudanese could be living in Sudan without citizenship for either country. The UN Refugee Agency says in this report from Sudan's capital, Khartoum, reporter Henry Wilkins meets undocumented people and discovers they have problems accessing work, education, and medical care.
Bachir, who declined to give his family name for fear of reprisals from the state, drives a tuk-tuk, or motorized rickshaw, in Khartoum. He's 19 and says he would rather be studying at college, but because he does not have Sudanese citizenship, he cannot. He says he studied up to the third year of high school, but because he doesn't have legal documents, he can't apply to college. He tried to get a job to tide him over until he got them, but struggled to find work as someone without a high school diploma. He says he can't fix this. Bachir is one of many ethnic South Sudanese who've been unable to obtain citizenship or identity documents in Sudan since 2011 when South Sudan gained independence. UNHCR says as many as 1.2 million ethnic South Sudanese in Sudan could be in similar situations. A law designed to naturalise people after the 2011 partition has never been fully ratified, creating a legal limbo for those who have no connection to South Sudan, other than being seen as ethnically South Sudanese by the Sudan government. Ibrahim Almaz Deng came from what is now South Sudan to live in Khartoum when he was a child. He says you can see he is sick. Although he's getting treatment in Sudan, he is cut off from the outside world. Doctors have advised him to get better treatment abroad. But how, he says. He says his brother has submitted the documents. Security services approved them, the Interior Ministry too, but the presidency still has not accepted them. He adds he's been waiting 8 months. Mahdi Madani is the president of the Southern Sudan Migrants and Returnees Organization, an advocacy group set up to help the undocumented. He says the current government has done nothing and that everything comes down to the law, which says references are needed to get nationality. It's a really difficult situation for the returnees from the south, he adds. Unless an undocumented person provides the names of Sudanese citizens who can vouch they've lived in Sudan for a certain number of years, they are unable to obtain identity documents. Madani says his organisation has only been able to help around 6,000 people obtain citizenship. UNHCR says the situation is legally complex and hard to define because it comes down to which country people feel an emotional connection to. They told VOA that many of the undocumented have been offered refugee status in Sudan, but have refused it because it comes with stigma and does not allow them to work. The UNHCR representative for Sudan, Axel Biskop, says the solution should be about how the undocumented can be
more included in the society as such, in order for the state of Sudan to actually also benefit from this large amount of people who are yet to be defined if they are Sudanese or not.
He added that one solution could be a free movement of labour agreement in East Africa, as exists within West Africa's political bloc, ECOWAS. But that can take years, and for people like Bachir, it may be too late to fulfil his ambitions at college. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Khartoum, Sudan.
From Khartoum, we move to New York, where former U.S. President Donald Trump is expected to appear in court at around 2 p.m. New York time. VOA's BMJ Murithi is in the court at Manhattan. My colleague Douglas Mpugwa reached him a short while ago to find out what is going on just before the former president arrives at the court.
I think it's simply an expression or manifestation of what the American democratic system is all about. I think it's simply an expression of the supremacy of the rule of law, and who an individual can grow taller or above the law. So in as much as people will try to, put some political coloration to it, I think the most important thing is that we must be able to dig deep to see what, infractions or alleged infractions that the former president is being accused of committing. I think that's the way to go. But one clear picture, as far as I'm concerned, is that it shows clearly that within a functional democratic system, everyone is within the confines of the law, and therefore the supremacy of the law exists. And that will serve as a very great lesson to those who aspire or those who are in political positions to know that obviously, you cannot grow beyond a system, that nurtures you.
Talking of lessons, how is the reaction in Africa, those people are talking to and hearing from, and what can be learned from this?
Well, the action in Africa is that it sends, you know, jitters to the spines of, you know, leaders who loom in most cases larger than life. Yeah, but when you're a leader, you become untouchable, you become, you know, inaccessible, and you can commit any crime and you go scot-free even after you're out of office. So I think the lessons are tremendous, but one important lesson is the fact that it shows that you cannot grow beyond a system that nurtures you, like I said. And as a leader, you'll be expected to play by the rules, to play the game by the rules, to ensure that you do things, you know, whether in or out of office, based on conventions and the provisions of, you know, the statutes and rules of your particular environment. Otherwise, as soon as you are done, in the event that you are covered by some immunity while you are in office, as soon as you are done, you are likely to be apprehended and charged, you know, for these crimes that you are committing. So it's a very big lesson. It's going a long way in, you know, showing that leaders are not indispensable leaders. They are also infallible. So a lot of lesson to not just leaders in Africa, you know, but virtually every, you know, citizen that find himself or herself within the realm of public life, to take it easy and, you know, continue to function within the confines of the laws of the land in whatever country.
What would you say to those who claim that, despite saying that nobody is above the law, some leaders, maybe on the continent, use their powers to arrest their political opponents?
Yes, precisely. That's been the major challenge here on the continent of Africa and parts of Asia and Latin America. But I think examples like this, in very recent times, this basically is the first time that it's happening even in the United States of America. It's not often, it's not common, and I, like I said, it's going to serve as a very big lesson to our leaders here who, like I said, loom.
That was Douglas Mpugwa talking to an analyst about the expected results of today's trial. Let's now go to BMJ Muriti, who is in New York at the courthouse.
Yeah, I'm right outside the courtroom here in Lower Manhattan, where, as you know, former President Donald Trump is supposed to be arraigned. What is happening here is that there is a lot of people that gathered outside the criminal court here in Lower Manhattan, as was expected, because the former President Donald Trump is expected to be arraigned here anytime from now. He is expected to be arriving here. And what you can hear in the background is, you know, there are, as I said, all manner of people here. Some are his supporters, and others are really not his supporters, and are really celebrating the fact that Donald Trump will be the first former president, or even a sitting president, to be charged with a criminal offense here in the United States.
People were worried about the protests near the courthouse. How is the situation? Are the protesters peaceful?
So far, I haven't seen anything that I can say is in terms of being chaotic. People are peaceful, but of course, tensions are rising. But I can also report to you that the security here is really, really beefed up. And so far, there haven't been any issues to report.
Those Trump supporters, are they in big numbers as expected or not?
Yes, there's quite a big number. Where I am, I see quite a number of them. And, you know, there are many more that are within streets that are beyond my...
That's my colleague BMJ Muriti at the courthouse in Manhattan, speaking with Douglas Mpugwa. That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now leave you with Kozos Clan and the song Biniya.
Yeah, still a live record. Biniya Juba. Many men.
I'm John Tanza in Washington on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producers Kwame Wafori and Nabil Biagio, plus our engineer William, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Oh,
Ma, Naguru, Miss Sudan. Mama,
we need to pass. Bubble watch and a 10 alpha.